Welcome to Tuesday Terror, an anthology of stories written by junkies and based in the Sigler. This podcast is for mature audiences only. It contains foul language, adult situations, and prolific graphic violence. If you're easily offended, you should not listen any further.
This episode is brought to you by the Petco.com coupon code LAUGH, that's L-A-U-G-H, which saves you 10% off of products at Petco.com and gets you free shipping on orders of $65 or more. For orders under $65, well, you can still save 10% with the code LAUGH10, that's L-A-U-G-H-1-0. Petco offers more than 10,000 high-quality pet-related products for your dog, cat, bird, fish, reptile, or rodent. Leashes, collars, beds, posts, tanks, food, medicine, you name it, they've got it for your family friend. Save time, save money, get everything shipped right to your door. Go check out Petco.com and write down the coupon code LAUGH. Send that to all of your friends who have pets so that they can save money too. And now on with our story.
Greetings and salutations, my fellow junkies. Welcome to episode number 7 of Tuesday Terror, which contains the conclusion to Lefty in the Boxcar. It's coming to you right after a brief rundown of part 1. The story so far. Lefty is dismissed from his job as a bouncer for treating Bill, Boxcar Brakeman, like any other drunk. Randolph Montgomery, Boxcar's promoter, is impressed by Lefty's performance and hires him on to ensure that Boxcar behaves whilst training for his next bout. After a rough start, Lefty gets Boxcar back on track and things are going well, up until the week before the fight. Lefty and the Boxcar, Part 2 of 2, written by Stephen Gomez, performed by Ariok Morningstar. On Tuesday evening, 4 days before the fight, there was a knock on Boxcar's door, about 10 minutes before he was getting ready to turn in. The kid sat at the kitchen table, looking over the paper while Tommy Dorsey played a little something on the radio. He started to get up and answer the door, but I cut him off. I already had to reason with one or two of the hangers-on that had surrounded Boxcar, gently but firmly telling them that the free lunch was over. At least for them. I was surprised to find the promoter, my boss, Mr. Montgomery, at the door. He had his own little entourage with him, but didn't look none too happy about the situation.
"Hey there, Mr. Montgomery. It's a little late for a visit. The kid and I was just about to turn in."
"Boxcar!"
Mr. Montgomery ignored me. I took my cue and stood aside so the promoter and his buddies could come in. Kid stood up and walked over to meet Mr. Montgomery. The lines on Boxcar's forehead told me he wasn't expecting a meeting any more than I was. Behind Mr. Montgomery came in a fella about 6 foot nothing, weighing a solid 250 and wearing the kind of gaudy, ugly, expensive gold jewelry that screamed that he had cash to burn. If you were in my line of business, which was any kind of business you needed to be in, you knew the suit. His name was Miles Hatfield, and just seeing him here meant bad things were about to happen. Behind Hatfield stood two smaller, well-dressed men whose job it was to do anything Hatfield said needed doing. The cut of their suits didn't hide the heaters they kept inside.
"Lefty?"
Hatfield gave me a nod. We were fairly well acquainted.
"Hatfield?"
I nodded back, keeping my jaw tight and my eyes on the other two men, just in case.
"That's Mr. Hatfield,"
said one of his goons, giving me a nasty glare. In a fair fight, I would have beat him to a pulp. Everyone in the room but the kid knew that there wasn't any such thing as a fair fight, though.
"When Hatfield pays my bills, he's Mister,"
I taunted the gunsel.
"Right now, he's just another hood."
Hatfield smiled a slow, dangerous smile.
"The man's got a point, boys."
"What's going on here, Mr. Montgomery?"
Boxcar was too young and inexperienced to know what was going down, but he was about to go to school.
"I wanted to tell you that you're doing great, kid."
Beads of sweat danced on Mr. Montgomery's forehead before they rolled down one of his chins and disappeared into the collar which threatened to strangle him.
"Good stuff, really. Someday you'll get your shot at the title.
Someday, hell!
Boxcar's confused look gave way to a little chest puffing.
As soon as I knock out Larson Saturday night, Joe Louis's people will have no choice but to give me a shot. Hell, New York will go insane if he don't.
I saw Hatfield shoot Mr. Montgomery a quick look, and Montgomery's face lost a little of its color.
Lefty, why don't you excuse us?
You're the boss, Mr. Montgomery.
I made my way past the goons to the door.
Let him stay!
Boxcar ground his teeth together as the pit of his stomach told him that this was bad.
Anything you want to tell me, you can say in front of Lefty.
I looked at Montgomery. He gave a little shrug, so I stayed.
Billy, I need you to do something for me.
Mr. Montgomery spoke in a small, soft little voice and got as near to Boxcar as he could.
As much as I love you, kid, I need you to take a dive Saturday.
What?
The kid pushed the fat man away like he was poison.
What the hell are you saying to me, Montgomery?
The man is saying that you are to go out at the beginning of the 8th round and take the 10 count.
Each word was a bullet pointed at Boxcar.
You can kiss my ass!
Boxcar made his way past Mr. Montgomery to Hatfield. Hatfield stood there as cool as ice, but I saw the two goons behind him snake their hands into their jackets, so I got my considerable bulk between Boxcar and Hatfield.
Cool it, kid.
I tried to force the kid back with one hand. It was like trying to hold back a steam engine.
Cool it, my ass!
All the rage and hurt Billy felt took the kid's face and twisted it.
I ain't taking a dive for no one.
He pointed a sharp finger toward Hatfield.
I can take anyone in this room, mister, including the filthy little monkeys behind you.
One of the filthy little monkeys took a step forward, but Hatfield raised his hand and the monkey stayed put.
Please forgive the lad, Eric. He's just received a bit of upsetting news. Isn't that right, Billy?
Get the hell out of here, mister.
Boxcar kept pushing towards Hatfield.
Get out of here before I hand you your ass.
Hatfield exchanged looks with Mr. Montgomery again and flipped his head towards the door. His goons walked out, and Montgomery and Hatfield with them. They spoke to each other in whispers, ignoring Boxcar and me as if we were chairs.
I ain't going down, you hear me?
Boxcar yelled into the hallway after them.
Billy Boxcar Brakeman, don't take a fall for no one, you hear?
If they heard, they gave no indication of it.
Calm down, Billy.
I put my hand on the boxer's shoulder and nudged the door closed with my foot.
They're going now.
It ain't gonna happen, Lefty.
There were tears streaming down the kid's face.
I ain't going down. I don't care what they say.
I know, kid.
I wish that I didn't know this dance as well.
I know.
It wasn't long before Mr. Montgomery made his way back to Boxcar's apartment, creeping through the partially open door.
What the hell do you want now?
Boxcar sat slumped down at the kitchen table, his heavyweight frame looking like a bantamweight.
You gonna ask me to beat up my mom?
Montgomery snaked his way through the apartment and took a seat next to the kid at the kitchen table. I sat down on the sofa and watched the scene unfold. I worked for Mr. Montgomery, so I knew which side my bread was buttered on. But at that moment, I would have loved nothing more than to grab him by the throat and squeeze till his eyes bulged. The only problem with that was he had more throat than I had hands.
I'm in deep, Billy. I need this to happen. I need you to take a dive.
I can't do it, Mr. Montgomery.
Boxcar looked to me like a 10-year-old could beat him right about now.
If I take a dive, then I'm nothing, and I can't be nothing.
Montgomery didn't say anything more for a while, and the kid just clenched his jaws together and shook his head over and over again. The minutes felt like hours of silence, and it was finally broke by Mr. Montgomery letting out a breath he had held in forever.
You sure you can't do it, huh, kid?
I'd rather die.
All right, then.
Montgomery rose slowly and wearily from the kitchen chair. The world was taking its toll on the fat man.
Then I'll talk to Hatfield, and we'll work it out.
Really?
The kid was breathing regularly for the first time since Montgomery had entered the room. He looked less like a heavyweight contender and more like a kid who had just been told that there really is a Santa Claus.
Really?
Montgomery was showing more balls than I thought the fat man possessed.
We'll make this work. You just get into the ring and give him hell. I'll talk to Mr. Hatfield.
The kid relaxed his jaw and nodded his head slightly, as if he were putting the matter to bed. But Mr. Montgomery and I had both been around the block, and we both knew that it wasn't as easy as that. The day of the fight, a change came over the kid, a kind of peace I hadn't seen before in him. Everything he did that day had a tranquility about him. He was rested, ready, and at peace. It struck me as kind of strange that a guy who was going to trade punches with another guy who actually trained to punch you back might be at peace with himself. But I guess that's what it took to be a great fighter. And maybe the kid did have what it took. We had a breakfast of bacon, eggs, and hash browns that day, and following the trainer's advice, the kid had a liquid lunch made up of this nasty concoction that Mr. Grant had put into a blender and liquefied. I knew that once the fight was finished, I was off Mr. Montgomery's payroll, so the free lunch was over, so I commemorated the occasion with steak and lobster for lunch. By the time we reached the garden, the kid had gone even further inside himself, to that place where some of the soldiers I had seen from the war had disappeared to. He was completely at peace, ready to do whatever needed to be done. I was wrong about the kid. He wasn't going to be one of the good fighters. He was going to be the best there was. The crowds that flooded over the kid as soon as he got out of the car were almost overwhelming. Everyone wanted the kid to do something, say something, let them do something for him. And through it all, he kept looking forward, never turning, never even noticing them. Grant escorted the kid to his dressing room, where Mr. Montgomery waited. He walked up to the kid like he was his father and slapped him on the back.
It's a sellout!
Mr. Montgomery's fingers flicked the ashes off the same big, cheap cigar I've seen every fight promoter in my life smoke.
It's just like we said, kid. After you beat Larson tonight, the champ will have to give you your shot.
Boxcar nodded then, displaying the most emotion I had seen from the kid all day. There was a sudden rap on the door. Mr. Grant and Mr. Montgomery ushered Boxcar past the screaming, hungry crowd and into the ring. I would have loved for it to have been a great fight, or even a good one, but it was a lopsided, one-way affair. That's what scared the hell out of me. From the first bell, Boxcar had complete control of the match, using a quick, decisive left jab to Larson's face right out of the gate to prove it. After a quick combination to the midsection, Larson got on his bike and tried to keep away from Boxcar, spending most of the first round backpedaling. In the second round, Larson came out prepared, but the Boxcar was still fighting his fight, never letting his guard down, never giving Larson an opening, and never letting up on Larson. Not for a moment. In the third round, still reeling from the first two rounds, Larson came out swinging, fighting wild, looking for that bolt of lightning that would even him up with Boxcar. But the lightning never came. Boxcar continued his careful, methodical destruction of his opponent. And since Larson was punching wildly, Boxcar was able to get some significant uppercuts and jabs in there as he continued to ruthlessly work Larson's body. As soon as the bell rang for round four, everyone but Larson knew it was over. Larson showed up for the fourth, but his gloves were heavy, like they was filled with cement, and he kept dropping his left, which was gold for a righty like Boxcar. Boxcar threw a right hook that lifted Larson off his feet and put him down on the canvas. To Larson's credit, he made it back to his feet by the seven count, but he was done. Twice more he fell down in the fourth, and never made it back up after the second fall. Popcorn and garbage rained down from the angry crowds as Boxcar took his corner and waited for the ref to raise his hand. The crowd continued to rain down boos and catcalls, and I couldn't blame them. They had expected a better fight, one that went the distance, and so did everyone else, including me. The newspapers had written about nothing else all week,
and I knew that the action on the fight was heavy. In fact, the only person who didn't seem to expect the fight to be a good one had been Larson, who had answered the first bell as if he'd expected Boxcar to take a dive. I headed backstage, to Boxcar's dressing room, where the usual well-wishers and hangers-on mobbed him. The dressing room had all the action of a striptease joint on New Year's Eve, and every time I turned around, some beat writer's flashbulb was going off in my face. By the time I fought my way through to Boxcar, the place was complete chaos.
"Did you see that, Lefty?"
Boxcar had lost the coolness he had before the fight.
"I busted Lawson like he was a piñata."
He was smiling and happy, like a kid on Christmas Day, which I guess he was. But it was still my job to look after the kid, so I had to play the Grinch.
"Listen, Boxcar."
I grabbed his robe and pulled him close.
"I need you to get out of here. I need you to go to your apartment and pack."
"Pack?"
Boxcar's eyes widened.
"Are you crazy?"
He waved me off like he was brushing off a fly.
"The only place I'm going is home with that blonde in the front row what was eyeing me like a T-bone. Then I'm going to get drunk, eat a whole chocolate cake, and take that brunette friend of the blonde's home as well. Then I'll have Montgomery give Joe Lewis's people a call to let them know that I'm coming for him."
The kid was walking on air, and I could see in his eyes that he would never believe that Larson went down the way he did.
"Listen, kid,"
I whispered in his ear.
"You gotta go to your apartment and lay low till I come by. You gotta trust me, kid. I've been square with you so far, haven't I?"
Boxcar was gonna say something to me just then. Maybe he was gonna protest, or just tell me to go shove it. But I could see him turning things over in his mind, knocking things around in his head. He squared up his jaw and nodded his head.
"Okay, Lefty. You've always been square, so I'll go on home."
A smile flashed on the kid's face.
"But tomorrow, you and me go out and it's all cake and whiskey."
"All blondes and brunettes, kid."
I patted the kid on the back. We managed to shove everyone out of the dressing room while the kid changed. Once he was done, he pulled his cap down low over his face and we snuck out the back entrance, telling anyone we met along the way that Boxcar Brakeman was with the photographers in the lobby. We got to the curb while the crowd wandered in, and I shoved Boxcar into a cab.
"Go home. Don't call nobody. Don't open the door for no one but me. And don't talk to anyone."
"You're worried about me, aren't you?"
The lights of Broadway were finally coming on over the kid's head.
"I'd just rather be safe than sorry."
I tossed a 5-spot to the cabbie. I told the kid that I would be over as soon as I could, and that I would bring over some sausages and beer from Size Deli on the way. The cab sped off, and I went over to square things up with Mr. Montgomery before I left. I found Mr. Montgomery outside of the kid's dressing room, talking to that shark Hatfield. Hatfield's thugs was with him, and they was sweating Mr. Montgomery. Hatfield had a hold of Mr. Montgomery's lapels and gave him a quick slap to the face. Beads of sweat flew from the fat man. I stood just outside the doorway of the staging area, so I couldn't hear what they was saying, but it didn't take a genius to figure out that Hatfield was unhappy, and when Hatfield got unhappy, people got dead. After Mr. Montgomery sang, Hatfield shoved him backwards and let Mr. Montgomery scurry away. Hatfield then whispered something to one of his boys, and the scum walked off with a quick nod. I got one of those sick feelings in the bottom of my stomach, so I decided to follow the scumbag, just in case. Hatfield's boy caught a cab outside and I got another, giving the cabbie another 5-spot to tail the goon. He took me on a short tour of the city, starting with Boxcar's gym and then on to Size Deli, where I could smell the bratwurst and pastrami from the cab. Finally, the thug ended up at Boxcar's apartment. I told the cabbie to drop me around the block and hoofed it back to Boxcar's place, keeping my considerable bulk in the shadows of the shrubbery. When I got around the corner, I caught the thug outside of Boxcar's window, his hand in his jacket's breast pocket. I was too far away to get there in time to stop him from pulling his rod, and was just about to call out when the gangster stopped cold. A look of confusion washed over his face, and he paused long enough for me to catch him with a full head of steam. I threw a shoulder into his side, smashing him into the apartment's brick wall. It knocked him off his game, but didn't take him out the way I had hoped. He jumped back to his feet quickly and reached into his jacket for his heater. He didn't make it. I took out my blackjack and whacked him upside his head. He went down hard and a little bit bloody. He wouldn't be going anywhere for a while. Taking the goon's gun, I pocketed both it and the blackjack and took a look through the window to see what had thrown the goon off his game. I saw a boxcar lying there, on the floor of his apartment, stone dead in a pool of his own blood. I went to the kid's front door and found it unlocked. Cursing the kid out, I went inside to find the lights on and a bullet hole in the back of Boxcar's head. The room was still in the same order as it always was. A little dirty, but none the worse for wear. The kid had put up no struggle. He didn't even get a chance to throw a punch. I got out before the police arrived, noticing that the cheap thug in the bushes had scurried away while I was with Boxcar. I could call the police, but I knew that no one had seen or heard anything, because they never did. I gritted my teeth and took the long walk back towards the downtown area, where I could find a cab. I had to tell Mr. Montgomery that I had failed, and his fighter was dead. But I had a couple of things to check out first. Montgomery was at his home when I found him, a modest little three-bedroom job just outside the city. Most people would have considered a house like that to be a dream home, but to Montgomery, I knew that the house was only a bitter reminder that he hadn't yet made it far enough up the ladder. There was a cab outside, waiting to take him to the train station. I handed the cabbie one of my last five spots and told him to beat it. The five spot probably wasn't enough to get him to go, but the look on my face was. I let myself in through the front door and found Mr. Montgomery in his bedroom, jacket off and throwing everything he could into two suitcases. He was breathing hard, and sweat stains had formed in places I didn't even know sweat stains could form. He stopped in his tracks when he noticed me.
I heard about the boxcar.
Montgomery was trying to catch his breath.
I figured I needed to get out of town as quickly as possible.
Yeah, that makes sense, Montgomery.
I took a step forward. He glanced up at me, but he never bothered to stop packing. He arched his eyebrows.
What? No Mr. Montgomery?
Job's over.
I took another step closer.
I was the kid's bodyguard, and I let the kid die. I don't work for you any longer.
It wasn't your fault.
He kept throwing things into his last suitcase.
You couldn't know that there was a killer gunning for Boxcar. Don't worry, you'll still get paid.
No, I won't.
I came right up to him. He stopped packing and took out a handkerchief from his pocket. He used it to wipe the Niagara Falls off his forehead.
What do you mean?
I mean that when I told Boxcar to go right home, I told him not to call anyone and not to talk to anyone. When I got to his house, he was already dead.
Yeah, Hatfield must have sent one of his goons to kill the kid. He never had a chance.
He had plenty of chances, but they was all bad. I went to the kid's apartment, and everything was just how it always was. He didn't put up a struggle. He didn't throw a single punch.
The killer probably snuck up on him.
Montgomery's eyes were darting wildly about the room. I was close enough to him to feel his breath, and it was coming hard and fast.
The killer did sneak up on Boxcar. But that was after the kid let him in, and Boxcar was on his guard. I told him to lay low, and the kid did. Whoever he let in, he knew.
So Hatfield paid someone the kid knew to rub him out.
Montgomery was still sweating to beat the band.
There are lots of people out there who would sell their own mother for a sawbuck.
Yeah, there are. But Hatfield didn't pay anyone to rub out the kid.
I trailed one of his goons to the kid's apartment.
Then that's who must have killed Boxcar.
The mug stopped before he ever went into his apartment. He was surprised to find Boxcar on the floor. Already dead.
I don't know. Hatfield must have sent two of his goons.
He had no reason to. One killer was more than enough for one punch-drunk palooka.
I thrust one pointed, sharp finger into the fat man's chest.
You killed Boxcar. The kid trusted you, and you rubbed him out like he was nothing.
I didn't,
the fat man protested, squirming away from me.
I loved the kid like he was my own. I had no reason to.
You had 50,000 reasons to. Hatfield was leaning on you to throw the fight, so you knuckled under. You told him that the fix was in. And after the fight, when Boxcar wouldn't take a dive, you told Hatfield that the kid had double-crossed the both of you.
No, I wouldn't do that to the kid.
Montgomery tried to push past me and get to his suitcases. I put my arm to his throat and put his back to the wall.
I called an associate of mine, a nasty German mug with a scary laugh. He made some calls and found out that you had spread some action on the fight around the other side of town. You let the word leak that Hatfield put the fix in, and you went to bookies that didn't know you and put cash on Boxcar.
I shoved my forearm tighter into Montgomery's windpipe and lifted him a little.
No! No!
When the fight was over, you told Hatfield that it was Boxcar who pulled the double cross. You killed Boxcar so that he wouldn't say otherwise, and we're going to collect your winnings before anyone was the wiser.
No!
I lit up on Montgomery's throat, and he slid into a heap on the floor.
It wasn't me.
You went to his apartment. He let you in, and when the kid wasn't looking, you put a bullet in the back of his head. Isn't that right, Mr. Hatfield?
From behind me, Mr. Hatfield and his two associates came in, the one thug's head still bandaged from where it had met my sap. I'd met their car when I got to Montgomery's house, and from the living room, they'd heard the whole thing. Hatfield had the seriousness of a gravestone on his face, and when he saw them, Montgomery started to cry like a baby.
It wasn't like that at all!
The three didn't seem to take any notice of him. Yet.
Here's your payment, Lefty. As promised.
Mr. Hatfield pulled a small envelope from his pocket and held it up for me. I knew that no cop in the land would be able to touch Montgomery for what he did to Boxcar, just as I knew that Mr. Hatfield would take care of Montgomery for what he had done. He would have to do it. All he needed was the information. The envelope held $1,000 for me, which was the cost of that information.
Thank you, Mr. Hatfield.
I took the envelope from the gangster and slipped it into my own pocket.
If you don't mind, I would like to take my leave of you now.
Suit yourself, Lefty.
Hatfield finally turned his attention to Montgomery. I turned away and closed the door after me. It was about 5 miles back to town, but I decided to walk, even though there was a slight mist coming down. When I got about 50 feet away from the house, I expected to hear a muffled gunshot, but none ever came. I figured that was probably worse for Montgomery anyways, so I kept walking. I had $1,000 in my pocket. $1,000 would buy some kids a few toys, fix their roof, and buy me a lot of groceries. But on the way back into town, all I could think about was Boxcar and how he went out. And for the first time in a long time, I just wasn't hungry. There you go. I hope you all enjoyed Lefty in the Boxcar. This story is a bit different than what I've featured thus far on Tuesday Terror. Steve extracted a single character out of the Siglaverse and built a new storyline around him. I'd love to know what you thought of this approach. Steve and I would greatly appreciate any commentary that you'd be willing to share. If you have a story you'd like to submit, please send it to me at arioch@scottsigler.com. That's A-R-I-O-C-H at scottsigler.com. Full submission guidelines can be found at scottsigler.com/Tuesday Terror submissions. I'll have another Tuesday Terror tale for you in a fortnight. Cheers!
Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this episode of Tuesday Terror, produced by Morningstar Studios in conjunction with Dark Overlord Media. Music courtesy of the band Separation of Sanity. Check them out at reverbnation.com/Separation of Sanity. For more information on the Siglaverse, please visit scottsigler.com.